This podcast has been developed and funded by Accord in collaboration with people living with prostate cancer, their loved ones, and healthcare professionals. Please note, episodes are not designed to offer medical advice, and people appearing on this podcast are talking from personal experience. Hello, welcome to The Unmentionables, a podcast which brings you unfiltered conversation about prostate cancer. Now, this series has been created with and for people affected by prostate cancer and their loved ones. It aims to bring you open and honest discussion about some of the key challenges associated with the condition. Talking about cancer is never easy. Whether you're the one diagnosed, a loved one, even a healthcare professional, conversations can feel overwhelming, emotional, and sometimes even impossible to know quite where to start. Beyond the initial shock of diagnosis, prostate cancer brings with it a range of sensitive topics too: intimacy, incontinence, and hormonal changes that can be challenging to discuss. In this episode, we will be exploring common communication challenges and how to manage these. We'll also be hearing experiences and insights from our guests about how to approach sensitive and meaningful conversations with partners, family, and friends. With me today, Janet, who's here to share her experience as a caregiver for her late husband during his prostate cancer diagnosis and treatment. Mike, who is a prostate cancer survivor. And advanced nurse practitioner, Jonah, who's here to offer his professional opinion on the importance of good communication in cancer care. Thanks very much, all of you, for joining us. Janet, can I start with you? Could you perhaps share a little with us about your husband when he was first diagnosed, how you received that news, and what your early conversations with him were like?
Yes, Mike was diagnosed completely out of the blue at advanced stage. He was a super fit, super apparently healthy man. And it was an absolute shock. I was fairly certain he was going to be diagnosed with an enlarged prostate, but it was advanced, late stage. And so we left the hospital in complete shock. And he apologised to me. And that's something I've found very common with men. He apologised. And we went home and he immediately went into the mode of talking to his family, rang them all up to tell them, underplayed the seriousness of it, tried to protect them, which is a very common thing that I've found happens. And at this time, I'm on the computer searching for things I'd never expected to have to search for, and realised it was more serious than he indicated. And so when he stopped talking to his family, we had a little look at a booklet and he realised it was serious. And really, it was just a shock. But my overwhelming thought was, he's trying to protect those around him.
I mean, obviously a terrible time for you. How long did it take for Mike to communicate with his family the seriousness of the situation?
I'm not sure we ever really did. I think he was like a lot of men are in that situation and underplayed it. And quite often he would appear to be quite well. But then when he came home, I could see he wasn't as well as he was indicating. And that's something I think we ought to realise so that we can be there for a man at that stage of diagnosis to realise that he's used to being in control of his life, young enough to be living a full and active life, and that it is such a shock, and the cancer diagnosis is such a shock, such a serious matter, and to come to terms with it takes time. But during that time, family and friends want to know, they want to support, they're quite happy to think it's not as serious as it might be, And in a lot of cases, it isn't. But in the cases where it is advanced, it is important to realise that there's conversations that need to be had.
So in the case of Mike, then, you are the only family member or friend, effectively, who knows the seriousness of the situation, which in itself for you must have been a huge burden.
Yes.
Because you were already suffering from the shock of the diagnosis as well.
But we were also in the situation that we could communicate well, and that's so important. And we did talk about everything. Probably I forced him to talk more than he would have wanted to, but that's how it was. And we could talk about anything. But it is important to realise that there's people out there, there's healthcare professionals, there's support groups, there's people that you can turn to who've been there before. It's an awful lot for your friends and family to take on because they've got their own concerns as well. They're shocked that their father, brother, whatever, friend, yeah, colleague, they've got all that to come to terms with. And it's difficult for them, and it's quite common, I've seen, for the man to actually take that role and try to support them. But then something that I have noticed a lot is that a man will stop talking to people about it because they know that they're probably going to end up supporting somebody that's upset.
Mm. So how helpful to you were those support groups?
At that time, I didn't find any. I didn't, to be honest, I didn't have time. It's a number of years since Mike died, and there's a lot more treatments available now. And some men are tending to live a lot longer after an advanced diagnosis. But at that time, it was all sort of with Mike's business, with my work, and life was just chaotic, really. But I did find that. It was easier for him not to tell people because then if he told people too much, he would risk ending up supporting them when he didn't really have that capacity. He needed support himself, although he didn't, you know, it was a northern man. He didn't realise he needed support.
Yeah.
He just,
we northerners like that.
He was tough. He could handle it.
Mike, we're talking about communication, obviously. When you first received your diagnosis, who did you initially tell? Do you remember that conversation?
Yeah, my partner was aware. She was aware that I'd had a raised PSA because I was getting tested yearly, and I'd been referred to the hospital, and I had further tests. And then I came back and told her the diagnosis, you know, that I had prostate cancer. And that there were different treatments. It wasn't easy, but she was aware of that.
What about other members of the family, friends, even people at work? Did you tell them? Was that difficult?
Well, yeah, I had to tell my kids. My kids are in teens and 20s, but I tried to make light of it a bit by saying that there were treatments available and... you know, it wasn't at that time life-threatening, but I did need treatment. I played it down a bit.
Mm.
And then with work, obviously I had to tell our HR department, and I just mentioned that I was deciding which treatment to take. And then closer work colleagues was more difficult because people reacted differently. Some were visibly upset, and others were supportive. So, yeah, it wasn't easy to tell people.
Did it make it any easier for you personally once you had told people?
Well, in fact, I asked my manager if she'd tell the team rather than me trying to tell one by one. And that was way better because, they all knew at once. And then they were very supportive, saying that we're right behind you, and then it was an open discussion then.
Mm. How did your family react? I mean, I know you said you played it down, but how did they react to the news? Because the word cancer is in there, which scares everyone.
Yes, it's serious. But they they asked questions. You know, they asked about which treatment I was deciding to take, and how I was, and how my results are. They still ask that.
Hmm. Did they get involved in any of those decisions? For instance, the decision over the treatment?
No, that was down to me, really. And obviously, I discussed it with my partner. She was supportive.
Jonah, from a healthcare professional's point of view, it must be quite challenging, you know, to see the struggles some people have with communicating the fact they've got prostate cancer to friends, relatives. What can you do to support them?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult subject. I mean, once you mention the word cancer itself, you know whether, you know, what we discover is when you tell patients, sometimes even if you say you've got cancer but it's curable, but it's the fact that you've said cancer, you know, everybody, you know, we all, you know, your mind just wanders and start to worry about these things. But, you know, it's important to say, before I forget to say, that, you know, every patient who's diagnosed with cancer is given a specialist nurse, who we call key workers. So you should really have their number. You can call them any time of the day during the work hours. So, you know, if they're working from 8 to 5, you should be able to call them. They should know your case. They should be able to give you support at any time. So you don't feel like, you know, you're waiting between appointments. So if you've seen the doctor today, you're told to come back in two weeks, then you think, okay, what's going to happen in 2 weeks? But you can call these nurses and they can put you to different support. You know, they can put you to counseling. They can give you to different people to talk to who can help you through it. So it's important to realize that there's always somebody at the end of the phone. And, you know, if especially for patients who are struggling to communicate the information to their family, and it's maybe just call, ask for advice. Maybe, you know, the first time when patients are told about cancer, they don't really get it at that time. Because once you say cancer, no matter whatever we say at the end of that, it all just goes over the head. Because you're in a different, so maybe it's the day after, take a minute, call, and just say, oh, can we go through, you know, the appointment I had? You know, what's my situation? Try to understand it so that when you are telling your loved ones, you are answering their questions. There's nothing like just telling your loved ones, I've got cancer. They've got 10 million questions, and you can't answer any of them. And, you know, it's putting you in a situation where you feel, you know, they're stressing you out because you're not answering their questions. And always, always take your loved ones to their appointments. I always say, let the doctor do the explaining to your loved ones rather than you going on your own. Then you trying to explain to them what the doctor has said. Because, you know, the health professionals, they're trained in a way that they can explain it to a patient or to their relative in a way they can understand. So just let the doctors do the explaining. Mm. Involve your loved ones from the beginning, because we know that people who involve their partners, they tend to have an easier time of it, because you are in it together.
Can I ask Janet, Mike, were your loved ones involved in the consultations with your doctors initially?
No, they were at school at the time. Mm. So no, but my partner was with me for some of the support group meetings that I went to.
And Janet, I would imagine, being married to a northern man, then he would have gone to see the doctor on his own, did he?
He would have probably tried to, but I made sure that I took time off work and made sure I was there, because I am a northern woman as well. So,
yeah. You see, Jonah, we're talking about professional help, but how important is it to, particularly in terms of somebody's mental well-being, to have the support of friends and family?
So it is important to have support of your loved ones, because, you know what they say, a problem shared is a problem halved. And, you know, you have to recognize that it comes from a place of caring when most of the guys are not telling their partners, because you don't want to worry them. You know, you've been the protector, you've been the provider. you know, now you've got this burden and you don't want to burden your loved ones, you don't want to burden your wife, you don't want to burden your kids, because, you know, like we said, cancer, once you say cancer, everybody thinks the worst. So it's coming from a place of, you know, I love these people, you know, I'll carry this burden myself, so I don't want to burden them, I don't want to worry them. Like, you know, Janet and, you know, they both downplayed the situation.
Sure.
So that, you know, it can be accepted easily. So, but it's important to be able to share the situation with your families, especially with prostate cancer, because you always have to look at prostate cancer as, you know, most people will survive prostate cancer. Most of them know there's something going on anyway. So, you know, instead of you leaving them to wonder what's going on, you know, Jonah has changed, what's going on, they will know, they know you. So when you worry, it's not something you can completely, you know, hide from them. They'll know something is going on. And so just to share it, it makes it actually take some of that burden from you, and they know. And, you know, they'll be the ones to cheer you up. They'll be the ones to stop you going from this, you know, to retreat or retract into yourself. You know, they'll be the ones there to support you. We all need that for mental, you know, well-being.
I mean, from the point of view of a black man, we know,
yeah,
obviously, black men are twice as likely to suffer from prostate cancer as others. Is there still a stigma, or was there a stigma about a black man telling his family and his friends that he had prostate cancer?
Yeah, there is. I think it boils down to culture. I was thinking about this when I was coming here. If you look at how I was brought up, or how most of us are brought up, you don't share your emotions. You are the strong person there, you know. So, you know, to be seen to discuss this might be seen as a weakness, or, you know, you're trying to protect your family, or, you know, some people even believe just talking about it means you're accepting that you might have prostate cancer. But, you know, it's, you know, I've been in many situations where you're hanging out with other men, and usually it's about football, it's about many of these things. I've never known anybody to say, oh, I've been having back pain, or I went to see the doctor. You know, it's just things you don't talk about. I mean, my father passed away years ago. I can't tell you what he passed off. I know he was unwell, but it's never a conversation we had. You don't, you know, so it's a cultural thing. We're not brought up just to share everything. In some people, it's seen as a weakness. In some people, you just don't do it. You know, you just keep what's going on with you just to yourself. And, you know, then to try and change this after a cancer diagnosis, it's very impossible, actually. I think it just worsens the situation.
You know? I mean, Mike, when you found out you had prostate cancer, did that cross your mind? You know, did you see it as a sign of weakness by talking to other people about it?
No, I didn't really see it as a sign of weakness, but I was, I quickly realized that when you mentioned the word cancer, that people were in, they had their own experiences, albeit themselves or loved ones, and their reactions were different.
What about, you know, your family by now, they know you've got prostate cancer. Did you discuss things? And you said you played it down a little. What about things like the side effects? Did you manage to discuss the potential side effects with your family at all?
Only with my partner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't really want my kids to know about the potential side effects. So I'll talk about it with them now, but at the time, no, I didn't want to.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. You talk about it with them now. What changed?
Well, I've survived. I've got the experiences. They're older and they're more aware of cancer because it's more in the news these days. Mm. And from me, they've asked me questions, and it's a lot easier to talk to them now.
Yeah. So you confided in your partner. Did he get support from anywhere else?
From the local prostate cancer support group, yes, indeed. Learned a lot from them. From learning about, like, Kegel exercises and different treatments and what the diagnosis meant. Yes, plenty there. And also afterwards going back and sharing my experiences with others. So it's very useful.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Janet, obviously you're in the situation that you're not just a wife, you were the caregiver as well. It must have been enormous challenges. What were the sort of challenges like in fulfilling that role?
That's a tough one. It was keeping everything going at home, keeping the job going, worrying about what would happen if and when everything went wrong and I lost Mike, because Mike was in a situation where his cancer was advanced, and we knew although most men lived with and after prostate cancer, it wasn't going to be the case with him. And so it was thinking about what we had to do. And personally, I used to think, is this going to be the last birthday, the last Christmas? It was quite difficult, but not really talking about it, because we tried to keep things upbeat, tried to keep things as normal as possible, tried to encourage him to go out with his friends. But I was expecting, as if I'd have been in that situation, I'd have gone out with my friends. We would have talked about illness first, hospital treatments, appointments. I'd have got support. When Mike came home and I said to him, "Do you have a good time?" "Yes, yes, yes, everything was fine." "What did he talk about?" "He talked about work and football." And I said, "But what about, have you told them about your treatment?" "Oh, they don't want to know anything about that."
So his friends weren't aware of the
seriousness. They really weren't aware of it. When I had to actually ring them up and tell them that he'd died, they actually said, "Well, he never told us. We just assumed he was going to get better." And he'd actually been joking about if he had chemotherapy and lost his hair, he was going to get a wig like Elvis. And that was how he dealt with it all. It just wouldn't take the gravity of it. He made light of it.
What about from your point of view? Was there any stage where you thought, you know, I need some help here as well?
I think it's difficult to think that way, because you see that, I did sort of wonder how I would cope on my own afterwards. Was there a life? Would I be able to reinvent myself? Because when it's a partner, it's the two of you together, and it's like you have a past, you have a present, you expect to have a future, but that's going to be all changed. And so that was quite difficult, but I was quite honestly, I was more bothered about looking after the day-to-day with Mike. Mike was always, he was one of those men, he was a problem solver. And so he never saw a problem, he saw a solution. And so we just dealt with each day. We never talked about what might happen. I sometimes wished that we could, but then afterwards I realised it would have been far too painful for either of us. And so we just dealt with, if he had a problem with pain one day, we sorted that. If he had a problem with mobility, we sorted that. If his business had a problem, either he sorted it, and if he wasn't well enough, then I'd step in and do what I could.
John, it's interesting. You know, are these typical experiences, if you like? Mike didn't want to tell his family, yeah, apart from his partner, you know, and Janet's Mike didn't want to tell his friends. Is that typical?
Yeah, I mean, these are typical experiences of, you know, it was interesting when Janet said, you know, the husband apologized to her. These are typical experiences where people, you know, like Janet was saying, you know, if you tell people, you know, then you can't start to get that sympathy, or you actually have to be strong one to support them, you know. So sometimes it's just easier to, people find it easier to keep it to themselves and just pretend nothing is happening. But I think it's really important to recognize that there is a lot of support out there. So for example, if you don't know how to have that conversation with your partner, you know, you can go for counseling. You don't have to go together. You can admit to the nurse, I'm struggling to support my partner. I really don't know how to do this, or I'm struggling to speak to my wife. Can I see somebody, you know, go for counseling? They can give you the tools you need to be able to have this conversation. I think these conversations needs to be had, you know, so you are able to support that person. You know, you can only support somebody if you really know what's going on. Like his friends, you know, they thought he was fine because, you know, he only gave them a little bit of, you know, if maybe he had said exactly what was going on, they might have been able to do other things. But it's very difficult to talk about these things, especially for men, because we usually don't do it in our, you know, I hear my wife and friends talking, they talk about everything that's happening to them. You know, I meet my friends, okay, yes, I'm okay, you know, this, you know, we hardly talk about my health. You know, I don't tell them how I'm doing, or, you know, I had a cold, you know, things like that. People just don't talk about these things. Generally,
is that counselling route at all, Mike? Was that something you would have ever considered?
At the time, I didn't think I needed counselling. I was getting quite a bit of support. I was doing a lot of reading about prostate cancer and looking at different treatments, and busy with work. So I don't think counselling. I didn't even consider counselling at the time.
Janet, was it something that you considered?
It wasn't, no. I did at times speak to the specialist nurses at Prostate Cancer UK when I wanted to know a little bit more, but I wouldn't have called it counselling. I just expected that I should get on with it. And it was Mike that was going through it, and I was there to support. And that was really all there was to it, and we didn't really have amongst our friendship group people who were in the same situation, so I knew very few people who had actually been there. And I think that if I had to say to people following that route, I would say find somebody that's been there, that understands, because then you're not putting pressures on friends and family who really have their own pressures and can't deal with it as well as somebody has who's been there. So the support groups, maybe the counselling, just somebody who understands.
I think this is where the support groups come into their own, really. So a support group, it's about, you know, going there to meet other men who have a diagnosis of prostate cancer. So you meet people at different levels. Some are at the beginning of their journey, some are considering treatment, some have had treatment, or some are in Mike's situation where they can have treatment, but, you know, it's only to try and prolong life. So when you go to this group, you know that everybody in there is in the same situation. And actually, you know, some men will give you advice if you're struggling with something. Let's say if you're on hormones, you're on hot flashes, you know, men, you know, they share different advices. This is what I did for this. Try this, try this. Or, you know, how did you, you know, you can ask somebody, how did you make that decision? Because I always say, as a healthcare professional, I can only tell you what I've come to learn or to understand about prostate cancer, but I can't actually tell you what it is to go through it, because I've never gone through it. So to go to a support group, actually, you know, you'd have met other partners in a similar situation, or you'd have met other patients in a similar situation, so see how you're coping. So all this is put in place to support the patient, their families, and because I think women and families are welcome as well to support groups and stuff like this. So I think it's important. So when you start on your cancer diagnosis, you normally get a lot of reading. I don't know, did you get lots of booklets tons of things? Yeah. So, but it's, you know, but usually everything you need is there. But I think maybe we just need to give it a different stage when you think you need it.
Because I agree regarding the support groups. I took my partner with me initially, and she got a better understanding of what I was going through. But it was also very useful to share. But I'm still involved with the support group because I've had additional treatment last year. So maybe 4 or 5 years after the first treatment, I had more treatment last year, and I wanted to learn about others' experiences. And yeah, they were there for me then. And I still go to meetings.
Is that something you wished you'd done earlier?
No, I was going right from the start. Before treatment, I was already at a support meeting, and that was very, very useful. I spoke to people with all different journeys. Some people in their 90s even had survived prostate cancer. So they all had different experiences.
But I guess when you're initially diagnosed, Mike, I mean, there is no right or wrong, is that, you know, every individual will make their own decision about who they share information with.
Yeah, and even after I'd made my decision, there were people that disagreed with me. So I had to stick with what I believed was the right path for me. So.
Yeah, yeah. Communication, just finally, really, John, communication, do you see it improving? Now, at one stage, nobody wanted to talk about prostate cancer. Yeah. But now people are much more open.
Yeah, no, it's improving, you know, with all the, you know, the coverage in the media, you know, people coming out saying they've been diagnosed with prostate cancer. Actually, men are coming forward. They're asking for the blood test. And, you know, men are asking for have a national screening program, you know. So I think it's changing and it's improving as, you know, we're here talking about it to highlight, to try and improve that. So it's definitely improving, but there's still a lot of work to be done. Like we said, especially in other cultures, like black men, you know, there's still some work to be done. And in all men, really, I think we just need to realize that, you know, health is important. And actually, for us to look after the ones we love, we have to look after our own health. So, you know, we need to be open about that. Seek for help early. These things are curable. I'm sorry about Mike that it was a bit late. But prostate cancer itself, you know, nobody should really be dying from it because it's curable if it's found early. And we are fortunate we live in England where there is resources to be able to diagnose these things and you know, treat them early.
Janet, we'll stop on that positive note. Thank you for your professional expertise. Mike, Janet, thank you very much for sharing your stories. If you want any more information about the topics we've been discussing today, you can go to Macmillan, Cancer Research UK, Prostate Cancer UK as well. Accord has been working with a group of patients, caregivers and healthcare professionals to develop a prostate cancer discussion guide. If you want to talk about any of the topics covered in this episode with your healthcare team, the personalized guide can help you think about questions that you want to ask. You can then download or print the questions and take these to your appointments to have a more informed conversation. You can find the details in the description of the podcast, wherever you're listening or watching. So we have touched upon treatment options, side effects, and communication in this podcast series. I do hope you found some of the information useful. Bye-bye.